This is Fresh Air. I'm David Biancooley, in for Terry Gross. Next on our salute to Trashiness is humorist David Rakoff, a regular contributor to public radio's This American Life, whose latest collection of comic essays is called Fraud. Not that we think Rakoff is trashy, but he seems to take delight in accepting some unusual jobs. Like posing as Sigmund Freud in the window of a department store, or taking a day job on that much maligned form of daytime TV, the soap opera. Terry spoke with Rakoff in 2001, after the publication of Fraud.
One of your pieces in your new collection, Fraud, is about a small part you had in a daytime soap. And you say in the piece, you know that soap fans would have killed to be on the set with you, but you don't watch these programs, you had no idea who the actors were, and so you like being in their presence didn't mean a thing to you. Isn't it strange to be with people who you know are really famous in some circles, and you have no idea who they are?
It's very strange, and they were extremely conscious of the fact that soap opera fame is fame of a very specific sort. It's actually not unlike public radio fame. You know, it's there's a very strict subculture to these things. So these people were, to a man and woman, gorgeous New York acting folk. I mean, they were beautiful. They had attenuated limbs and perfect skin. And, you know, when we were in the rehearsal room in the morning, all their signifiers were incredibly stylish and urban. There was one woman in a pair of black cigarette pants and a black beret. I mean, she looked like Faye Dunaway and Bonnie and Clyde. And she was just fantastic looking. But there was this vague sense of apology for the fact that they seemed to understand that the nature of their fame was exurban, out there, you know, among a very specific group and, you know, multitudes, but a very specific group of daytime television watchers. And they didn't seem to comport themselves with the kind of, well, I'm just terribly famous and you should have heard who I am. You know, they immediately saw me for what I was, which is, I mean, at that point, I guess I came in as an actor in New York City. It never would have occurred to them that I would have watched the soap opera.
What was your part on the soap?
I played a modeling agent from the big city. I think I played a modeling agent from New York City, in fact, or Chicago. I think it was New York. And I was passing through the town, the fictional town that this soap opera took place in. And apparently, although I had never been on the soap opera before, I passed through that town a lot, you know, because I'm always checking out what's happening there fashion-wise. It seems to be a hotbed of fashion, apparently. And there was a fashion show, and I was at the Country Club, which is the main set, you know, the place where they all congregate to act out the little dramas. And there was a fashion show there, and I was just checking things out, and I see one of the town lovelies, you know, I can't remember her name. I think I gave her a pseudonym, obviously, in the book. I didn't want to incriminate anyone. And I see her, and I am deeply interested in her, in both a professional and, I thought, you know, it helped my character, a possibly sort of predatory, vulpine kind of way. And I'm insinuatingly unctuous, and I try and get her to, you know, leave this podunk two-horse town and follow me to New York City or Chicago, I can't remember, and participate in this small but terribly important fashion show that I'm organizing. And she rejects my advances, but I am, you know, slitheringly immune to, you know, the cold shoulder, and I then leave. I never appeared again, sadly.
Did you have any great lines in the part that stick out in your mind?
I'm trying to remember my lines. It was something like, I feel like I'm discovering a new talent. I mean, the way you wear a dress, your look, just things like that, just fantastically good, slimy. Yeah, he was a slime ball. And I was wearing my own clothes, of course, because they give you $10 extra if you bring your own costume.
Oh, you're kidding.
Yeah, so I was acting with my house keys on my person.
Huh.
Which was...
Did you look different from the rest of the cast because they're all these afternoon soap stars and you're not?
I looked so very different from the rest of the cast. It was really... you know, they're gorgeous. They're not just pretty. They're heart-stoppingly beautiful people. Their faces are mathematically precise, you know, cross-culturally beautiful. and I am, in a word, not. So it, I also have a certain kind of ethnic look. I have a certain careworn Jewish quality to my face. So, I did sort of stand out in that way. Happily, there were a lot of extras at this particular episode because they were playing the other people in the audience at the fashion show. And they all tended to be senior citizens because there's this vast network of lonely seniors in New York whose kick is to go be extras at soap operas. They all knew one another. And they had all clearly worked on all the other soaps that played in New York, that filmed in New York. So they all knew one another. And then there was me, and then there was this aesthetic super race.
You write in your piece that the typical parts you get are either Jewy McHebrew or Fudgy Packer. Would you describe
Fudgy McPacker, yes.
Fudgy McPacker, yeah. Would you
they're
describe...
Scots. They're two Scottish clans. Well, the McHebrews are your prototypical Jewish clan. So that's I'm either sent for one of two parts. I no longer really act with any frequency except for the Seder. I don't get sent on auditions. But I Jewy McHebrew is generally a kind of a careworn. I already said careworn twice in the same interview. I'm so sorry, but he's a kind of inquiring, furrowed browed, bookish type who can either be the kind of guy who, and he speaks rather quickly with the kind of inquiring people of the word, people of the book, and he says things like, with dentated final consonants. So he says, Papa, I can't believe it. You sold the store? Or he plays the kind of humanist rabbi type who says, and so we eat the bitter herbs. Why? Because it is to remember the bitterness of in Egypt. That's the Jewy McHebrew type, generally. Or he's a psychiatrist. They're like, how do you understand that? Whereas Fudgy McPacker is, the gay character. And he can take a various variety of forms. There's, supercilious Fudgy McPacker, and he's generally a hotel concierge or a makeup clerk or a waiter. And he drolls. And he's more like, no, we're not carrying that this season. Next. And he's just too bored, too cool for school. But there's the other Fudgy McPacker type who is gaining great currency right now culturally. And he is the lovable queen who everybody loves. He gets the best lines. He's replaced, for want of a better term, the fat girl within the dramatic pantheon. Fudgy McPacker, the funny one, now gets the best lines. Like, did somebody say swim team? And, that becomes his catchphrase, and they put that on T-shirts, and then he's, 10 years hence, he's opening malls, and he's a bitter, bitter, bitter sociopath as a result.
A bitter McPacker.
It's a bitter McPacker. Fudgy McBitter. And, or the other one is he's dispensing clear-eyed, romantic advice, not being privy to romance himself because, of course, he has no actual sexuality. And he says things like, can't you see he's in love with you? Just tell him. And then they kiss, and then it's cut to Fudgy McPacker, and he sort of cocks his head. Oh, I'm sorry. No, it's not cut to Fudgy McPacker. It's cut to the dog. And the dog cocks his head and goes, yeah, and cue the dog, or cue Fudgy McPacker. Either way, terrific, terrific parts to get and be sent on, which is essentially why I stopped being an actor.
Well, what would you do when you were cast in a part that was obviously a stereotype? You knew the voice of the stereotype. You could do the stereotype perfectly.
And I wouldn't do it. And resultantly, I didn't get many parts. And I also, wasn't... I didn't... Frequently, when I would be asked to audition for things, I would decline to even go into the audition. And, if you do that enough times, then you stop being asked, which is precisely what happened for me, which was okay. I mean, it was essentially a conscious choice on my part, not to do that.
So what's the problem that when casting directors see you, all they can think of is Jewy McHebrew or Fudgy McPacker?
Essentially, I think that it's there, and this is not to say anything against casting directors. I think there's kind of generally a kind of a risk aversion. Less so on stage. On stage you can be a number of things. But in television and movies, let's face it, there's an enormous amount of money riding on these things. And so a certain risk aversion is only expected. You know, I don't blame them. But there's not, as a result, a terrible abundance of imagination in terms of casting.
David Rakoff, speaking with Terry Gross in 2001. His collection of essays is called Fraud. His new collection, Don't Get Too Comfortable, will be published next spring.